everybody, and good evening, and welcome to Film Club. We are live tonight on Odyssey. We are live on DLive, and we are live on RadioAlbion.com. We have a very, very special film for you tonight. It's a special film because it's Laura's pick. Laura's pick won out, and we are reviewing Malcolm X. So she's obviously turned up on time. It's not an action film. She's got her own way, so she's here. That's how women work, guys. You know it's true. Now, if you like this film, or if you like the stream, or if you value our work, or if you want to contribute in any way or have your voice heard, you can do so in a variety of ways. You can contribute via Entropy, or you can contribute via the Odyssey chat. Now, if you send a donation, if you send a financial gift, that will definitely be read out on stream. And if you go into the Entropy chat, you can ask an unpaid question. And if we've got time, we'll read those out as well. We usually do have time on Film Club because it's a little bit more of a laid back stream. So please, please have your voice heard. Get your messages in early, though, because we read them out in the second hour of the show. Now, we've had a really busy weekend this weekend. We've been out in Cannock demonstrating against migrants being housed in local hotels. There's plenty of footage about that all over the internet, and there'll be a lot more of that tomorrow night on Laura's show. So we will be discussing that, or Laura will be discussing that at length with Sam tomorrow night on Tea Time with Sam and Laura. But it was a great day, and thank you to all who attended. So let's get into tonight's film. As I said, it is Malcolm X. It's the 1992 version with Denzel Washington. And let's go around the group and ask everyone what they thought of the film, if they had a good weekend, and what were their initial impressions. So we'll start with you, St. Harrison, who's avatar is that of Blackula. Thankfully, we didn't end up reviewing Blackula. If we had, I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much, although it might have been considerably shorter. But St. Harrison, how was your weekend, my friend? How have you been? Did you enjoy the film, and what were your initial impressions?
Good evening, fellow blue-eyed devils. Yeah, it's been a good weekend. I spent yesterday counting up the votes for the short story competition. The results will be on at 9 o'clock after this is finished. And Mrs. St. Harrison has been in a heated chess match with Barclay all weekend, so don't know who's won yet. In terms of Malcolm X, I'd never seen this film before, and to be completely honest, didn't know all that much about him. When I saw how long the film was, I thought this is going to be hard work. And it was, because it was a very long film, over 3 hours. And watching a film over 3 hours about someone you don't really know about, and let's be honest, I don't really care about, makes it all that much more difficult. But it was kind of a film of two halves. The first half I thought was crap. The second half was much better. And if it kind of kept up the pace of the second half in the first, I think it would have been more enjoyable. But that's not to say it's a bad film. But I'm sure we'll get into it more.
Okay, well, next on to Laura. How are you doing? I hope you had a good weekend. Did you enjoy the film? What were your initial impressions? And are you happy that you won the vote this month?
I am happy that I won. Do you know, I think it's the first one that I've won in over a year. And I've had to put up with some rubbish from you lot for the last year. And I'm just really happy that I actually had a film picked that I wanted to watch, because I am a really big Denzel Washington fan. I think he's probably in my top 10 actors. I just really enjoy his films. I think he's a really talented actor. He's not somebody who plays the victim. He's somebody who's forged his own success. And his films are really enjoyable. I think he does always play the same character. He always plays a kind of loose cannon, like maverick guy who doesn't quite play by the rules. He always has a bit of a authority figure that he plays. But and in this film as well, I think he was kind of just playing Denzel Washington, but I thought it was a really great film. I really enjoyed it. It was about 3.5 hours long, and for me, it didn't feel too long. You know, normally a film like that, you'd be watching the clock thinking, God, how much have I got left? But it just sped by. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I do think it is because I like Denzel Washington that I enjoyed it so much, because it is just a very good character for him to play. And I'm really looking forward to getting into it in this conversation regarding what's correct in the film and what bits they missed out. And I think I know myself about some bits that they've maybe missed out or changed a little bit. But I thought it was really good. I mean, I don't think it's one of those films where it's like, oh, you know, the cinematography is beautiful or anything like that. But it was an enjoyable film, and I enjoyed following Malcolm X's life and learning about him. And I think because we're involved in politics as well, and, you know, we're doing these street protests, it was good to sort of compare what he was doing and what he was saying to what we're doing and what we're saying. You know, where he was talking about, we're not victims, and, you know, you can be proud of who you are and all this kind of stuff. That's what we're doing. We're getting out in the streets and we're giving speeches like that. And I said to Sam, oh, do you think we're like the early days of like a Malcolm X kind of thing? And he's like, I don't see why not. So I enjoyed it from that perspective as well. But yeah, I thought it was a great movie. I don't think it's, you know, going to ever be one of my best films ever, but I enjoyed it. So yeah, those are my thoughts, and I'll pass it back.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. Throwing it over to Nativist. How are you doing, my friend? Did you have a good weekend? Did you enjoy the film, and what were your initial impressions?
Yeah, evening, everyone. Good weekend here. Bit of work, a bit of socialising, a bit of sunbathing. I was actually really excited to watch this film. I think I pushed for it in the last episode because I listened to the Malcolm X autobiography in December when all the yay stuff was kicking off. I thought we should have a careful look at African-American nationalism, because I have never really seen a black celebrity that doesn't go on about either Malcolm X or Marcus Garvey. Normally they're fans of both of them. When the yay stuff was kicking off, I thought best do some background reading, and I found out quite a lot. And I think Laura is right that there are incredible parallels between our own ideology and white nationalism and African-American nationalism as it was back then. We're both oppressed peoples looking for self-determination and dignity against the forces of integration and liberalism. There's an awful lot to take from it. The film doesn't really cover it, but right at the start of Malcolm X's autobiography is his father. He was a great admirer of his father, and his father was a preacher and follower of Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey was a Jamaican that was sort of credited as the first black nationalist, in the African-American context. He was a pan-African leader as well. He wanted to see a sovereign and united Africa that could stand up against colonialism. And yeah, it seems likely that Malcolm X's father was killed. And then you do see in the film, although it's not very clearly explained, that the insurance payout on his life was never paid. So when his mother was struggling, she had her children taken away from her. I think there were 7 kids or something, a lot anyway. And he had good reasons to hate the white man. But knowing you're a slave, sort of considering yourself a product of interracial rape, like he said his mother was raped, his father was murdered, the insurance payout was never paid, so his family was split up, and then, you know, the family home was raided by the KKK or whatever. So he had many good reasons to pursue this path. And I think he's a remarkable man, and I have a lot of respect for him. And I'm looking forward to discussing that topic tonight. For me, it's not really going to be so much about the film. It's going to be about discussing black nationalism. So I'm looking forward to getting into it.
Okay, well, thank you. I think everyone's already said some really interesting things. And I do think there's an awful lot to discuss with this particular film. Now, I'm going to give my brief overview of this. Now, when I started watching the film, and I saw that little timer at the bottom, and I saw that it was over 200 minutes long. I think it's about, I think it's 201 minutes long. So it's 3 hours and 20 minutes. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be forever. This is going to be tough to get through. And it is not tough to get through. It is a very good film. I really enjoyed it. I have some critiques of it, but there are certain aspects of this film that stand out as being really, really superb. And I think it's an interesting film because I believe that when Spike Lee made this film, I think he made it hoping for the film to be very anti-white, very black nationalist, and for the film to be sort of very powerfully something that would motivate black people to hate white people and place black people on a pedestal. But when you actually watch the film, it actually paints Nation of Islam in a very dim light. It paints the fight for black separation as being something run by complete charlatans and gangsters. And it doesn't actually paint blacks as wonderful people who can do no wrong. This isn't, you know, a vision of Wakanda or anything like that. And I think when you come away from this, despite some blatant anti-white moments, the film is very, very true to life, very enjoyable. And I think Laura made some really important points, and so did Nativist, that as a white nationalist, as an ethno-nationalist, as somebody who wants peaceful separation, there were many parts of this which I felt myself agreeing with. So let's get into the film. And I first want to talk about the casting. And I don't think you can discuss this film without talking about its casting. And that's because the casting was so perfect. Denzel Washington played the role so well. He looked so much like Malcolm X that for somebody who is political, for somebody who is aware of Malcolm X, for somebody who's, you know, seen footage of Malcolm X in the past, if this had been in black and white and interspersed with actual real life footage, I think it had been difficult to tell the footage with Denzel Washington apart from the real footage of Malcolm X. That's how good his performance was. That's how much he looked like Malcolm X. But not just that. The man who played Elijah Muhammad, the head of the Nation of Islam, also looked exactly the same as the real life Elijah Muhammad. And obviously they are the two, if not, you know, two of, if not the two most pivotal characters in the whole film. There are other important characters, obviously. Obviously, Malcolm X is the most important, but Elijah Muhammad is probably the second most important character in the film. And for the two main characters to almost be replicas of their real life counterpart and look that close, it kind of felt uncanny, and it drew me into the film so far that I found it gripping. And Denzel Washington's performance was absolutely magnificent. You believed every moment of it. Now, I didn't think it was the best made film ever, and we'll talk about our criticisms of it before we get into the themes of black nationalism and other things. So we'll talk about the film and how the film was made. Then we'll talk about black nationalism and our feelings on Malcolm X later in the show. I don't think it's the best made film ever, and we'll leave that for the criticisms part. But it's certainly no Martin Scorsese, you know, epic. It's not on that level, but it is well made. Spike Lee did a good job. But what elevates the film from good to very good is the casting and the performances from all of the key acting talent, especially the characters Malcolm X and Elijah Muhammad. Now, let's go around the group. Let's talk about the casting. We'll start with you, St. Harrison. What are your thoughts on the casting? And am I talking total nonsense, or do you agree?
No, you're not talking total nonsense. I'm not a massive fan of Denzel Washington. However, this is the best film that I've seen him in. Because, like you say, he is identical in both the look of the look of Malcolm X, and also how he acted and how he spoke. And the clips at the end, I was trying to work out whether it was like stock footage or the stuff filmed with Denzel Washington, and then watching stuff on YouTube since, just to learn a bit more that the film missed out. He's like one and the same person. And Delroy Lindo, who plays his mate at the start of the film, he's good in most things. But yeah, the casting is excellent. Everyone did a massive job in it. It was interesting that a load of the black actors in it actually helped pay for the film, because they went over budget because they wanted to get it finished. Like, all the black celebrities just helped pay for it. But no, the film, acting-wise, it's faultless, I think. I think as everyone else agrees.
And do you have any thoughts, St. Harrison, before we move on to the guy who played Elijah Muhammad? Because I think it's very easy just to say, well, Denzel Washington stole the show, which he did. It was I don't know if he won an Oscar for this. I haven't actually looked that up.
He didn't, no. He was nominated.
Well, the fact that he didn't win an Oscar for this means that the Oscars are not only anti-white, but also brain-dead garbage. Who could have won an Oscar above him that year? I don't know. And you know, this isn't me cooking. This isn't me selling out. This is just this is genuinely how strongly I feel about it. I thought the performance was just
To be fair, to be fair, it was Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs. So
I take it back. Well, no, yeah. I don't know. I mean, Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs was excellent, but I don't know. This, for me, it was a really special performance. Anyway, we'll throw it over to Laura. What do you think to the acting, Laura?
Yeah, you know, actually talking of just a very quick one sentence on Silence of the Lambs, I always thought that Anthony Hopkins was absolutely amazing in that, until I watched the show, you know, the TV show Hannibal, where Mads Mikkelsen plays Hannibal Lecter, and I think he does an even better job. He was born to play that role. So if you haven't seen it, I'd check out that TV show. It's brilliant. But like I said at the start, I'm a big fan of Denzel Washington. I'd probably put him in my top 10 actors. He's the only black person who is in my top 10 actors. But I just think he's really good. And I enjoy his films. They're always easy to watch. And he's just a very talented actor. If Sam's trying to convince me to watch a film, all he has to do is go, Denz is in it. And I'm like, all right, stick it on. We'll watch it. I'll give it a go. I really like Man on Fire as well. I think that's a great one of his. But I think what I like about him is, I remember, because he's like a high IQ person in real life, I remember trying to look up what his ethnicity was just to see where he came from. And as you probably guessed, he doesn't know, because he is a descendant of slaves. I think it was like his great granddad who was a slave or something. But he doesn't play the victim. You know, he doesn't go on about oppression and this and that. As far as I know, he's kept his politics completely private, apart from, I think, he supported Barack Obama at one point, which you'd expect. And I just like that he's someone who's like paved his own way and become successful through his hard work and talent, rather than, it seems like, every other black person out there who just moans about being a victim and just demands free things. He doesn't seem to do that. And I think this role was just perfect for him. Like you've all already said, you know, he looks like him. He's got the smile. He talks like him. He was born to play Malcolm X, really. So I think he was spot on. And all the other actors, I don't actually know the guy who was in charge of the Nation of Islam. I've not seen him in real life, so I can't compare. You know,
Google him. They're virtually identical.
I look at his picture. I can't compare the real one to the film one. But I just thought everyone was spot on. There was no one in the film. You know, sometimes you get someone and you're a bit like, oh, that's took me out of the moment a little bit because your acting's a bit off. I didn't experience any of that. I thought all the women were really good as well. I just thought everyone was spot on. There were nothing that broke the suspension for me.
I've got to ask you one follow-up question, Laura. Did it break the suspension for you when Christopher Moltisanti turns up at the end and interviews Malcolm X outside his burning house?
Oh! Did he really?
Yeah, the character who plays Christopher Moltisanti from The Sopranos and also Spider from Goodfellas was the reporter who... Yeah, that was the only bit. I was like, oh, it's Christopher Moltisanti. That was the only part. But I didn't know if you noticed, as a Sopranos fan...
Do you know what I learned the other day? Do you know that Lady Gaga has a bit in The Sopranos?
No.
She's she's at like a party, I think, and she's in the background. She has a bit... a bit of screen time where like she does some laugh and she's like some drunk girl or something. But yeah, I just learned that the other day.
Ah, did not know that. Right, okay. Well, let's move on to Nativist. What do you think to the casting, the acting? Were you impressed as the rest of us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, talking to the other actors, Betty was exactly as I imagined her in the book. I think it's Betty, his wife, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Elijah Muhammad was very good, his friend. And, yeah, I think Denzel did a great job. There's a stark difference between the character of Malcolm before prison and after prison. You know, in his earlier life, he was like a drug dealer and burglar and womanizer and just a general criminal of Harlem.
Black man.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something more polite to say. But yeah, typical of the sort of African American decline. And then, yeah, his transformation in prison to a literate and pious man was very good. And then when he got the haircut and put on those glasses, I was like, bloody hell, that looks exactly like Malcolm X. So, yeah, I was fully into it, especially after the after prison. You know, when he really looked the part and he was really pursuing his agenda. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I didn't really like the start so much. The same kind of thing in the book. In the book, he's describing his degenerate life in great detail. And you know, he talks about how you get these you had these like white women going to dances, desperate for black men and all this kind of stuff.
Is it his autobiography, his own one?
Yeah, yeah. Right. But one thing I'll note from the book versus the film is in the book he talks a lot about Jews and how the Jews controlled the economy of Harlem and how they kept money between themselves and they were doing dodgy business practices like bootlegging and all this kind of stuff.
Is that when he called it Zionist dollarism?
I don't remember that exact phrase.
Yeah, it is.
But if you notice in the film where he's making one of the first speeches in Harlem and he's saying the white man owns all the shops and feeds us bad liquor and bad food and all this kind of stuff. He makes that exact speech in real life, except it's the Jews run Harlem, feed you bad food and sell you liquor. The Jews do this, the Jews do that. But, you know, Spike Lee's obviously changed it to the white man.
That is so interesting that you said that, because the first half of the film did annoy me a little bit because he was saying a lot of stuff and I was thinking, did he say this about white people or did he say this about Jews? And I wasn't 100% sure because I know that Malcolm X did, you know, call out Jewish power and he, as he explained it, Jewish victimhood in real life. And there wasn't really anything about that in the film at all. I think I caught one sentence where he said something about Jews in the film. And I was wondering whether these things that he said about white people in the film, he did actually say about white people or whether he said them about Jews in real life. So that's really interesting that they've basically taken all of that out of the film, haven't they?
Yeah, they basically stripped the anti-Semitism completely out. But he was against whites. Like he called whites like blue-eyed devils and all sorts of stuff. But in terms of his like fundamental critique, it was directed more at Jews. And Marcus Garvey was thrown in prison for mail fraud because he sold stock for a shipping company that was shipping Negroes back to Africa because he wanted to see the repatriation of African Americans back to Africa. And he actually sold stock in this company to African Americans mainly. I think he raised something like $30,000 or whatever to buy a ship. And then he was chucked in prison. And Marcus Garvey blamed Jews for putting him in prison. I mean, I don't know much about it. But it sounds the sort of thing that they might do, you know, get him thrown in jail on a trumped up charge where he hasn't really broken the law, as they do to our people in this country. But yeah, Marcus Garvey was in contact with the KKK. He wanted to make an alliance with the KKK because they both believed in separation. And, you know, Malcolm, you know, followed his example. He, as part of Nation of Islam, and for, you know, about three decades, he promoted separation. He emphasizes that in the book, separation, not integration. He attacked Martin Luther King. And then I think just before he was assassinated, he sort of renounced the separation argument and he went like full Islam. Islam is like very integrationist. You know, all must convert, all must worship Allah, blah, blah. Even though in reality, Muslims are very racialist. Like a Lebanese Muslim would never want his child to marry a non-Lebanese. And the same thing for Arabs would look down on marrying a African Muslim or whatever. So there's like this unspoken racialism within Islam. And Malcolm, I think, went down the integrationist Islam thing towards the end because he was obviously upset with Nation of Islam. But Nation of Islam, you know, Louis Farrakhan, he makes some great speeches. You see his clips on Twitter now and again. He annoys all the right people. I think he probably gives Jonathan Greenblatt a nightmare every week. And yeah, so the continuity is sort of Marcus Garvey to Malcolm X to Louis Farrakhan. And then you've got the heroes in between, like Muhammad Ali. He was Nation of Islam, a big fan of Elijah Muhammad as well. But Malcolm was very upset with Elijah Muhammad for, you know, having these mistresses on the side and all this kind of stuff, even though, you know, you could argue that's quite Islamic, but Malcolm was obviously took his piety very seriously and felt very let down. He did genuinely describe Elijah Muhammad as a prophet on earth. So I know I've gone really off track here, so sorry about that, Mark, but I am keen to discuss the ideology that I
have.
We are going to get to that.
Now, I now want to talk a little bit about the making of the film. This is my only real criticism of the film, as it is. And that's that I don't know if any of you noticed this or if this was just me, but this film came out 2 years after Goodfellas. And from the minute I started watching it, the film's in three parts. You have his youth as sort of a degenerate young black man involved in criminality, you know, sleeping with women, drugs, straightening his hair to try and make himself look more white. Then the second part of the film is he's this hardcore separationist Nation of Islam preacher who gives these amazing fiery speeches. And then the final part of the film is he's this monocultural but multiracialist Islamic scholar. So he believes that everyone should be the same culture, but it should be Islam. But if other races are part of Islam, then they can work with him. And it's quite interesting that the first part of the film almost felt in many ways sort of a blow by blow, almost sort of recreation of Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas. And then towards the end of the film, before his assassination, there's some really fast cuts, fast music, the tempo changes. And it feels like that final day where they're following Henry Hill around in Goodfellas and everything's going mad and he eventually gets caught and it all falls to pieces. And I do think that Spike Lee definitely watched Goodfellas. You've got to remember, Goodfellas was released 2 years earlier. And I think this film, Goodfellas, had a major, major influence on the making of this film. I think Spike Lee produced this film, and he, I'm not saying he's terrible at what he does. I know he's anti-white. He's not terrible at what he does, but he's no Martin Scorsese. And I think if it wasn't for Denzel Washington and the rest of the incredible cast who completely knocked it out of the park. There wasn't a single poor performance in this film. In fact, you could tell that everyone who was part of this was really passionate about it. But I think if it wasn't for the cast members, this might have come off a bit like a bloated passion project that came off as almost like a B-grade Goodfellas. But the film was massively elevated by the acting and by all of the performances throughout. And I just want to throw that out to the rest of you. That's my only criticism. So if you guys want to comment on that or have any criticisms, now is the time to air them. We'll start with you, St. Harrison.
As I said before, I thought the first part of the film was quite dull. And it kind of, technically, the film isn't that...
Stop there a minute. How could anything be dull when Denzel Washington is wearing a full pimp suit?
I mean, that was one of the reasons I didn't like it. But no, it technically, it's, nothing really stood out. I see what you mean. It follows the same kind of process as Goodfellas, like charting this one bloke's journey. But no, it's well made, but visually wasn't very spectacular, was it? I mean, the period aspect of it was good, but it annoyed me more that he'd missed things out, as Native has said. So, for instance, it doesn't really explain why he converted to Sunni Islam after his trip aboard. Or maybe it did, but I missed that.
And I think it did.
No, it definitely did. There was a bit where he says there's a bit where he labours this point that he was sat basically with a white man with blonde hair and the bluest eyes he's seen, but that white man was, you know, praying to Allah at Mecca, and that changes his opinion that he sees people of all different colours, but all united behind Islam. And it does labour that point at one point, actually.
I probably nodded off, but no, it is well made. But it just jumps around too much. Like I say, it could have been about half an hour shorter and still been a good film. But no, it's only criticisms I have of it. It's interesting though, that Black Nationalists didn't want Spike Lee to make it because they knew he'd ruin the character, which I think, as Native has said, by that they mean take out all the Jewish references.
Laura, do you have any criticisms?
When you're watching something that's based on real life, I always feel a bit like I can't 100% immerse myself in it because I worry about propaganda and how Hollywood are going to sort of like Hollywoodize the film. So I think, I don't know if that's like an actual criticism of the film or if it's just that I am a little bit on edge when I'm watching stuff because I'm like, is that true or is that not true? And I sort of go away and, you know, do a bit of reading and try and figure out what parts were real and what parts weren't real. I was disappointed about them. I mean, it was always going to happen in Hollywood, wasn't it? But I was disappointed about, you know, what we discussed earlier about them taking out his views on Jews and the Jewish like media and that kind of stuff, because that seemed to be an integral part of his beliefs and something that he felt quite passionate about. So
can I just jump in there as well? I don't want to like keep cutting people off, but that's not just integral to what he believed, but it was also integral to the message of the Nation of Islam. And if you ever listen to, you know, anything by the Nation of Islam are very clear about, you know, who owns the music industry in America, who has got black youth involved in gang crime in America through the promotion of, you know, black gangster rappers. It's not just part of Malcolm X. It's an entire central pillar to the Nation of Islam.
Mm. Well, I wanted them to keep that stuff in and just be honest about, you know, his life. I think it's disrespectful to pick and choose the bits that you want to portray and leave out something that's a big part. So, yeah, when you're watching something that's based on real life, it's always difficult to kind of just enjoy, I think, and just kind of let yourself go with the film, because they only let you know what they want to let you know, don't they, really?
Okay, Nativist, what are your criticisms of the film?
Yeah, I agree with you. The likeness to Goodfellas. You know, when they're... So in the autobiography, he describes his going to these dance clubs and casinos and whiskey and smoking inside a lot. And the film does portray that fairly well. Makes it actually look quite exciting, you know, the formation dancing and stuff. I don't know if it would have happened like that, but it looks like a, you know, a decent culture. And yeah, it does remind me of Goodfellas in that way. There's a lot of the same kind of scenes, you know, when they all go out to the club on Fridays with the girlfriends, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, so that, yeah, I didn't think about that at the time, but I think I was thinking it subconsciously, that sort of this is familiar. And in reference to the Islam point, Malcolm was very critical of Christianity. He felt that it was something that the white man uses to promote the idea of peace on earth and, you know, goodwill amongst men, but it didn't lead to any sort of better life for black Americans. It was all just posturing, and Christianity was this, you know, religion that allowed the bourgeois oppression of his people to go on. And in the book, he's very critical of Christianity, actually. So I thought I'd make that point as well.
Okay. Now, I don't think we can discuss this, because it's quite interesting. When we said we were going to be doing this film, I knew we were going to get some backlash for sort of covering a black film. We hadn't really done a black film before. And we got a little bit of backlash. Got a few people saying, oh, I can't believe you're doing this. I'm not watching this month if you're doing this. And you know, that's always disappointing. But I do think that I'm not saying that Malcolm X himself was terrible. But I think Spike Lee is anti-white. And interestingly, Spike Lee took out the, you know, the anti-Jewish sentiment that Malcolm X certainly had, and Malcolm X's anti-Zionist rhetoric. But something he definitely rammed up was anti-whiteness in the film. And he makes the biggest play throughout the film about white people basically being white devils. You know, he cuts out the stuff about the Jews, but he certainly keeps the bit in about white people being awful. And I do think this film was used by him more than, you know, there are plenty of bits that are very faithful, the bits that aren't. But I think he really used this film as a vehicle to peddle his own personal, you know, desires and political philosophy, really, which in many ways, especially towards the end of the film, was something that Malcolm X himself had actually let go of. You know, Malcolm X had let go of all of that. And I found that very interesting that he used this film as a vehicle for that. And there were certain bits of the film where, for instance, one part of the film is when he's in prison, and, you know, they're trying to sort of get him to see that his old ways were bad and that the Nation of Islam can help young black men. And they encourage him to read a dictionary. And there's this whole section where Spike Lee tries to make a point of saying that, you know, white society was structured specifically to keep black men down. You know, the whole of white society was structured not just to be pro-white, but to be specifically anti-black. And I think quite a lot of that is his personal bias. And I think quite a lot of that actually plays in to current sort of, you know, anti-white narratives, BLM narratives. And to be fair, I don't think that Malcolm X would have been particularly fond of BLM. And I certainly don't think he'd have been fond of somebody like George Floyd. In fact, I'd go as far as to say he would despise somebody like George Floyd. And the film makes a really interesting point that when Malcolm X did turn up at a police station and did fight for medical care for a black man who had been beaten by the police, that that black man was a disciplined member of the Nation of Islam. It's said that he didn't do anything wrong. You know, he wasn't a George Floyd character. It wasn't a guy who was, you know, robbing a convenience store, gets held down, and then he's at the police station. And I think that Spike Lee's narrative wasn't exactly in keeping with Malcolm X's. But what did you guys think about the anti-whiteness in the film? Did you think it was too much? Could you live with it? How did you feel about it, starting with you, St. Harrison?
I mean, you knew it was going to be anti-white because Spike Lee was making it, and he very rarely, if ever, uses white people in his films. I mean, Summer of Sam was all Italian Americans. Of course they're white, but you know what I mean. I mean, even looking at it now, what, 40 years after it was made, 30 years, like making a point how the mum wanted to have mixed kids so there wasn't any white in them. We see that being pushed now. The whole everything is our fault. I think he made it so it would be like open season on white people after black kids went to see the film. But as it turned out, after reading today, black people were more annoyed that they weren't taking the message of the film because black kids were still killing each other rather than white people. So maybe they weren't clever enough to understand the film, or it's just very mixed messaging. And as we've already pointed out, he wasn't always referring to whites. So maybe if it'd been a bit more Kanye in the film, the outcome would have been different. It would have seemed less anti-white and might have opened people's eyes a bit more.
Okay, Laura, what did you think of the anti-whiteness in the film?
Well, I think it was too much, but if it was accurate, then I think that would be okay. But like I said in my last bit, when you're watching something like this, you're always thinking, are they ramping it up? Is it accurate? Did that happen in real life? Or is this just Hollywood? I mean, for the first third of the film, it was constant talk about white men raping black women and, you know, all this crime and racism and women getting their houses burnt down and constant stuff about the Ku Klux Klan. And it felt like it didn't match reality. It felt too much. But again, I don't know if they're all examples of things that really did happen. He just took every example and stuck it into the film. I don't know. Do you guys know? Did all those things with the Ku Klux Klan happen?
Don't forget this. Don't forget this was the 1930s and 40s.
Mm.
So there was a lot more overt racism.
Well, I mean, people didn't mix back then like they did now, did they? The races were very distinct.
Well, for example, white women would go to the black discos and, you know, Malcolm in the autobiography says that, you know, these women were keen for it. They came off their own accord. And because he started burglary with two white women, he received something like a 10-year sentence because he was with the white women. So he was imprisoned for such a long time on account of it being a black man messing with a white woman rather than the crime of burglary. And then all the other reasons I've said, you know, that he had, he had a bone to pick with white people. And I would say the rape thing is true. Like, African-Americans have something like 20% white DNA because most of them are descendants of these white Protestant slave owners just having sex and creating mulatto children with the slaves. So that's why you get some of them. You know, Malcolm X is a quarter white. He was intelligent. He wanted to be a lawyer. But he was told in school that, oh, you're just a, you know, you're a black man. You need to sort of temper your ambitions, all this kind of stuff. So he felt he was talented enough and he felt he was being kept down. And, I have full sympathy, to be honest.
So his mum was raped by by a white man. That's true, isn't it?
Well, that was in the film.
No. His mum was the product.
His mum was mixed race, wasn't she?
Yeah, his mum was mixed race and didn't like it. And she said she wanted a black man who was, you know, in her words, sort of like a full-blooded black man, in order that her kids were more African than she was, because she identified with her African heritage. And there was this real theme throughout the film that the mix, I know this is going off topic, sorry, there was that theme in the film that the mixing of the races made it worse for everyone, that despite Spike Lee's attempt to making it anti-white, that message came across clearly to me. Anyway, sorry, carry on, Laura.
No, I'm just trying to establish which parts are real and which parts aren't. So his grandma was raped. So his mum was half black and half white, but she looked really pale. So she wanted to get with a very dark black man so their kids would be black. And is that what happened in real life?
Yeah, the other than the leaving out the Jewish stuff, it's very accurate. A few bits were minorly changed. So there's a bit where a white girl walks up to him and says, "I was so inspired by your speech, Mr. X. What can I do to help you? What can a white girl like me do to help you?" And he just looks at her and says nothing and walks off with like contempt. That's actually true, but it didn't happen where it did in the film. It happened at a cafe. And it was actually something that at a later date, Malcolm X said he regretted doing, because he said he was sort of rude and a little bit mean to her, even though she had good intention. But at that point in his life, he didn't want to accept any help from whites. So more or less everything happened, but a few things were moved around in the film to meet the time constraints. And there was a couple of things, there were a couple of characters which were composite characters. So Baines, the character who was who helped him in prison, then ended up becoming resentful of him, was in fact a composite character. He didn't actually exist. But generally speaking, other than these, his sort of dislike for Zionism, it is very, very accurate to his autobiography.
So if that's the case, I don't think we can say it's too much if it's all based on true stuff. I mean, we can say that he's picking and choosing the parts that he wants to portray, and he's purposely missing out certain things, you know, the Jewish stuff, to be honest. Yeah, so maybe it is anti-white because he's choosing white people as his sole target.
Nativist, was it too anti-white for you?
No, I was comfortable with it. You know, as I say, Malcolm's father was a Christian preacher and a black separatist. He was very likely killed, in sort of a racist murder. The insurance, the white owned insurance, life insurance company refused to pay out. He was, his family was split up, so all his siblings had to go to different households. He was quite a clever kid and wanted to be a lawyer, but he was told that he's black, so he should temper his ambitions. He got a very big prison sentence because he was hanging out with white women. And the X comes from, they wanted to delete their slave names. So the X represents that they don't know their real name because they were taken from Africa by the white man. And, you know, I don't think this will ever be reconciled. You know, the European, the white man shipped millions of Africans to the New World, to the Americas, to do labor, hard labor, for profit. And they continue to be at the bottom of society now, and they always will be, unless, I don't know, there's some miracle transformation of the economy from this sort of technical IQ-based bourgeois economy to something that revolves around sport and music, which is two areas that their race can excel at. And the whole scam of American politics is that they take the very few black success stories, the ones they put on TV, the ones they put on the sports arenas, the ones that are singing all these, chosen by the music industry, and the people that are really in control of society use these pawns as political control for liberal power, liberal global homogeny, hegemony, I should say. And, you know, they're still on the bottom of society, and it's not going to change. And we need to expose this trick. And ultimately, we need to amplify the ideology of Garvey and early Malcolm X, because separation is the only answer. And, you know, I hope that that will come back as a talking point. I feel that there's a deal that could be done if the merchant families, like Richard Spencer's family, now that he's a liberal and he's in favor of reparations, I can think of no better person than the House of Spencer to pay for the relocation of Africans back to Africa.
Well, I was going to ask, actually, just before you got onto it at the end then, but it's a bit different in Britain, because obviously we didn't, all, you know, the people that are here came over by choice, whereas in America, I guess they didn't. If you were in America as a white person, would you support paying reparations to black people if it included repatriation to Africa?
Well, I think the merchants should be forced to pay for it. Something like a $2 trillion deal in which banking elites and the likes of Spencer could pay for it. I could see that working quite easily. It's just, you know, promoting the idea.
Okay, and now the final bit about the film we're going to discuss before we talk about black nationalism is, and I found this very interesting, Spike Lee obviously tried to change certain parts of this to make it anti-white and to totally airbrush out Malcolm X's views on Jewish power. And I do find it interesting because Malcolm X, although he went from being a black separatist and black nationalist to being somebody who was for monocultural but multiracial Islam, one thing that he didn't give up on was his anti-Zionist stance. He kept that, you know, post his transformation to Sunni Islam. And that's quite interesting, especially considering Spike Lee kept that out of there. But we know why Spike Lee kept that out of there, because he wanted to make a Hollywood film. But either way, I did think Spike Lee failed at making this film truly anti-white, because during the film, he actually paints the black nationalists or blacks that want self-determination in a pretty poor light, with the exception of Malcolm X. Malcolm X is actually, you know, painted like wonderfully throughout the film. But, you know, it paints Nation of Islam, specifically Elijah Muhammad, as an African dictator, as a gangster, as a man that couldn't be trusted, as a man that didn't stick to his word, as a man that was petty, jealous, conniving, and using everyone around him for his own betterment. So there's a point where Malcolm X is speaking in the film, and behind him there's this huge portrait of Elijah Muhammad, and Elijah Muhammad is sat in a chair to the side of him with one of these silly little hats on like the dictators wear in Africa. And I think Spike Lee almost seemed to go out of his way to paint Elijah Muhammad as a corrupt African dictator. And that shocked me. But more so, towards the end of the film, you see Malcolm X living in a very modest house. He doesn't own his own house. His wife doesn't have many clothes. But Elijah Muhammad is living in this palace, and he's worth tens of millions. And he's living like a king. Not only is he living like a king, but he's using his power to leverage sexual favors from his multiple female secretaries who he's sleeping with. And then when they fall pregnant, if they say a word about it and say that the child's his, you know, he has them cast out of the temple. And at the very end, obviously, Malcolm X gets killed. But the blacks that kill him do so in a really underhanded way. And I think because of that, the film, although it did have plenty of anti-whiteness in it, it did show black separatists up to be pretty terrible. And I wasn't really sure what point Spike Lee was trying to make, because Spike Lee on one hand is clearly anti-white and he clearly tried to craft an anti-white film. But I felt in the end, he crafted a film that showed that blacks who wished for separation, that blacks who wished for self-determination were corrupt, dishonorable, essentially bad people that went out to murder their more honorable counterparts. I found that a strange contradiction, and it made me actually wonder throughout the film if Spike Lee as a director really knew what he was doing, and kind of a strange thing to include. I mean, obviously it's part of the story, so it needed including, but it certainly wasn't the black and white film I think he wanted to make. Now, what do you guys think of that, starting with St. Harrison, then we'll talk a bit about black nationalism?
See, when I started watching the film, I said at the start, I wasn't aware of how he came to his end. So I was quite surprised that it would be at the hands of, well, kind of almost surprised it'd be hands of other blacks. But yeah, I see what you mean in terms of how he's kind of spent the last 3 hours saying, oh, the white people are the problem, only to show that at the end, the blacks are the problem. And as you point out, kind of points out something that happened last year. I know it's kind of separate. You had that Sasha woman who was in London on the BLM marches going, oh, white people are the problem. And now she's been made brain dead by other blacks shooting her. So maybe he wanted to just stick to the autobiography without realising how it's come across. So, yeah, I do think you're right, but I can't say I gave it that much thought during the film, to be honest.
Okay, Laura, what did you think to Spike Lee's portrayal of actual black nationalists and the fact that ultimately they were the reason for their own downfall, not the white man?
Well, I don't know much about Spike Lee's politics, but perhaps he saw Malcolm X as having a redemption arc. And, you know, when he was like, oh, anyone of any race can join in, maybe he saw that as the good thing, and that he'd changed his ways from the nationalism, the evil nationalism ways. So maybe he saw the people who were still promoting separatism as not being good, you know, not believing in the right things. I don't know if he believes more in like the Martin Luther King style politics, that I have a dream style politics. I don't know if that's, you know, his thing. But if it was, it would make sense that he showed the separatists as the ones who got it wrong in the end, and Malcolm X was the good guy because he changed his ways.
Nativist, what do you think about the rather confusing message, which was, you know, quite categorically anti-white earlier in the film, but ends up painting blacks as the architects of their own demise?
Well, yeah, this is a great tragedy of African government. They're not very collective people. They struggle to work together, and they can be very corrupt. And that was seemingly the case with Elijah Muhammad. But the way it's painted in the film, I don't think it tells the whole story. It's, you know, it's heavily implied that the Nation of Islam killed him. And I think there were certain people with probably more motive to do the assassination, thinking FBI or Jewishpower.inc. So yeah, I felt that was possibly the other part of the film which was a little bit dishonest. But yeah.
Okay, well, we've got to the end of like what we were going to talk about with the actual film, but now I think it's worth actually discussing the black nationalism that we saw in that film. And it's something I actually found really, really interesting. And it's been spoken of a little bit by nativists, a little bit by Laura. But I watched this film, and considering this, me watching this film was coming off the back of me spending a day traveling to Cannock and a day in Cannock talking about white people finding their voice. It seemed kind of strange because I just made a speech in front of some 400 plus people in a packed town centre in England, saying to these people that we are the most marginalised, we are the most voiceless people in Britain today, that every other racial group collectivises, every other ethnic group comes together and advocates for their own well-being, but we as whites are not allowed to do that. And I actually felt an affinity for Malcolm X in this film, and I felt an affinity for what he was trying to do. And I'm not suggesting that I'm sort of the white Malcolm X or anything like that, but I felt the message that we were delivering in Cannock the previous day, the message, because I actually watched the film today, the message that we delivered in Cannock yesterday was remarkably similar to Malcolm X's message. But, you know, obviously we're delivering it for whites, whereas he was delivering it, obviously, you know, for blacks. And I just found that quite interesting. And it left me feeling at the end of this, as I say, I'm not saying he was, you know, the perfect leader or anything like that. I'm certainly not cucking, but I did feel an affinity for the man. And I felt an affinity for what he was trying to do. And I certainly felt that his style of separatism, which is the main thrust of the film, and his belief that blacks should take their own destiny into their own hands and do their own thing for their own people, is something that I absolutely agree with. And it's quite interesting because I'm actually a fan of Marcus Garvey. I believe that I like some of his quotes. I like the things he said. I like the way that he was trying to fund a Blacks Back to Africa campaign in America. He wanted, you know, African Americans to return to Africa. That was his goal. His goal as a political leader, as a firebrand, as an idealist, was to get blacks back to Africa. He didn't believe there could ever be a way for blacks and whites to live together in the United States happily. He said it would always end in tears. It was never going to be something that was good for either group of people. And that's something that really chimed with me. It's something that I liked about Malcolm X. And I don't know whether it was Malcolm X I liked or Denzel Washington's portrayal of Malcolm X, but I do think that as a nationalist, this was a black film with a black protagonist that I felt I felt I was rooting for. And I felt that, you know, it was something that I 100%, I endorsed. Well, I can't say 100% of it, but, you know, pretty much close to 100% of what he said during that film, I found myself agreeing with, endorsing, and feeling like, yeah, I could, you know, this chimes with me. So I don't know what you guys think. St. Harrison, how do you feel about what I've just said? Do you think I'm missing the point, or do you think I'm making a good point?
No, you're making a very good point, because pretty much everything he says is what we say. He said people should separate peacefully because it's for everyone's own good, and that everyone needs to look out for their own rather than others. He mentioned that people shouldn't look up to bad role models, and I know this wasn't mentioned much in the film, because he was saying about how black celebrities are there just for show, or the ones they promote are the ones that give the bad influence, as you see from like black rappers, etc. Don't take shit. Don't trust a tribe, which is something, again, missed out from the film, unfortunately. And don't pretend to care about groups that you don't, because I know he had a massive problem with white liberals, because they pretend that they care about the blacks, but they're only using them for their own good. And we also dislike white liberals as well, because they're not, they sit on both sides of the fence and do nothing for either. So, yeah, I think we should link up with some Malcolm X black groupies in the UK. We could all possibly be on the same page and all help each other.
Yeah, I want to say this as well. I did really like the way that he attacked white liberals. And I did like the way that he preached that ultimately, you know, white men should go with white women. Black women should go with black men. You know, he wasn't for mixing the races, but also he made a point of saying that those promoting that kind of integration, those promoting that kind of mixing, were actually not doing, you know, any favors to anyone, which is a really powerful statement to make. And it's the very opposite of what the powers that be want us doing today. Laura, what was your take on the black nationalism? Because it's obviously, this is a huge part of the film. What did you think of it?
Well, have you seen that you've got a new nickname in the chat? Markham X.
Markham X. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, it, obviously there were a lot of parallels between what he was saying and what we're saying today. Even down to, you know, the dictionary when he was looking through and he was like, oh, it says this about white and it says this about black. There are so many things where it's opposite way around today. So, for example, if you look at black nationalism in the dictionary, it's like separation for blacks and black people wanting the best for their nation. And then if you look at white nationalism, it's like hatred of everybody else, extremism, all this kind of stuff. So in many ways, I think a lot of the stuff that he was talking about with regards to black people back then, it's done a complete 180 and it's for white people today. And there were many things that he said in his speeches where you just had to change the word black to white. And it could have been a speech that we gave at the weekend, you know, talking about we're not allowed to collectivize, we're not allowed to look out for his own, all this kind of stuff. There are so many parallels. And as a nationalist myself, I want all people to be able to have their own homeland where they can have self-determination and be safe and away from harm and conflict and where they can prosper as a people. So I think the idea of us having our separate homelands where we can, you know, be among our own kind and realise our full potential is a good thing. So I support that for black people just as much as I support that for white people.
Nativist, you had a lot to say on this, so you've got the mic. Take as much time as you need, my friend.
I was getting a bit of heat earlier in the chat, saying I wasn't naming the right names for who was responsible for the transatlantic slave trade. And yes, I am aware that, you know, the first slavers were the men with small hats that landed in. We're running the first slave trade in Curacao in, I think, the 16th century, or maybe at the turn into the 17th century, very early on. And I think New Amsterdam, before it was New York, was a center of slavery as well, because the Jews got, a lot of them got kicked out of Spain and Portugal, and they found themselves in Amsterdam. And yeah, there was obviously a lot of Jewish finance of the transatlantic slave trade in Amsterdam, in London, and in Iberia before that. But still, a lot of white Protestants were involved, and white Catholics were involved as well. You know, Portugal moved. It was millions of Africans to Brazil. I couldn't put a figure exactly. I've got a figure of 16 million in my head, but it might even be more than that. But if you look at the exploration of the New World and what it did from a nationalist context, we saw the eradication of the Native North Americans. The Native Americans are basically wiped out now. The Inuits in Canada aren't faring particularly well. A lot of Amero-Indian tribes in South America got basically extinct, a lot of it because of measles and diseases brought by the European man. And both continents are full of Africans, and they are not thriving in the places they've been moved to. Looking at South America, South America's basically gone from Apocalypto, this sort of forest tribal existence, to City of God. Shanty towns full of black criminals running the drugs trade and killing people. Practically everyone in Brazil has been robbed, often at gunpoint. Colombia and, other places in South America, terrible crime problems and favelas everywhere. The United States, as I said earlier, the blacks are just used for political control by the true elite. There's this sort of Juvenilian analysis where the merchant power at the top uses the proles on the bottom to attack the middle, which you can see, in the likes of Black Lives Matter. That was a sort of psyop instigated by the federal government, because they want to federalize the American police force because they don't like the autonomy that the state police forces have. That was revealed by WikiLeaks, although it's never reported in the media because that's owned by the same elite. And then it was put into action by the George Soros Foundation, and then it gets adopted by basically every corporation in the United States and moves over to Europe as well. Even bloody South Korea. Because it's used by this merchant class to attack white people. So their presence is used for the purposes of the decline or eradication of our group. And, it's probably no better example of that than the advertising. We've all seen the advertising for the last, 6 years, just relentless advertising of black men with white women. And, President Joe Biden will brag about that on stage and say how great it is and how progressive it is. And, we know it's a ploy. It disenfranchises us. Many of my friends now have failed to get jobs or are missing out on promotions because they're white men. And other races are promoted ahead of them and given more money for the same or less work. And this whole system is leading to our disenfranchisement and eradication. And I think Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, they saw that their race was just being used. They had no dignity, no control of the economy. Racially, they are inclined to, not plan for the future or not participate in business because they're not good at this kind of thing. And, we can agree as separate nationalisms to overthrow this system. And there's a quote, I think it might be a Louis Theroux scene or something. And whoever the interviewer is, it might be Theroux. He says, he's speaking to like a white nationalist, like a southerner or something. So you're here at a meeting with these black nationalists, and the guy goes, "Yeah, we get on great. We get on very well because we're both racist." And I just love that quote. And I was particularly excited with the Yay developments in, you know, December sort of time, because I knew he was a fan of Malcolm X, and, you know, references in his lyrics, and he started going really far. And I'm upset that it's gone all quiet for the last couple of months. So I hope that's going to come back and this will become a talking point. Because I think everyone knows that it's not working out. Twitter at the moment is just full of black and white violence videos. You got these polls coming out that say like over 50% of black Americans hate or wish for the death of whites. And, you know, it's all been instigated by the Jews. And, you know, even conservatives like Scott Adams are talking up about it, or whatever he is, a liberal. And it's coming to a head, and it needs to be talked about. And separation, not integration, is the obvious answer.
Okay, thank you. Now, I want to talk about a couple of other things to do with Nation of Islam, and also specifically to do with Malcolm X. Now, I found it really, really interesting during this film that Nation of Islam were very much pro-black in the sense of making blacks better people. They were disciplined, they were ordered, they were told not to drink, not to use drugs. They were told specifically, do not sleep with white women. Don't go and sleep with white women. You know, don't drink, don't take drugs, don't do any of these things. You know, you are proud people, you know, in your own right. You know, show your pride, stick together, and be the best you can. Now, I think it's really interesting that sort of the Hollywood vision, or the Hollywood of the music industry vision of sort of black people, is very much the opposite of that. The Hollywood or music industry vision of black people is sort of gangster rap. It's blacks as sort of thugs, and it's blacks as more or less as a criminal class that, you know, sit, drink, use drugs, you know, play rap music, drive around in, you know, souped up cars. And I did think there was a real nobility to what the Nation of Islam and what Malcolm X was trying to do. And there was a particular point in the film that I absolutely loved. And it is the point where I call it the high point for me in the film of Malcolm X's career. And this is where Malcolm X leads a delegation of Nation of Islam to a police station, and they march down. When they get there, they come to attention, and they just stand completely silent, completely ordered. And the police, the establishment, they don't know what to do. They can't deal with this. They're literally messing themselves. What are they going to do with this militant black group that are basically refusing point blank to move until they get the answer they want about the member of their group that's going to be attacked? And I've got to say, and I'm going to make no apologies for saying this, but when I watched that, I thought, wow, I wish we had that. I thought, wow, I wish white nationalists could behave in that fashion. Turned up, they weren't in wacky uniform, they weren't in all combat gear, or, you know, wearing cheaply mass-produced, you know, T-shirts, or, you know, with cagoules on with a little logo on it, or silly berets like their dad's army. They turned up, suits, shirts and ties, smart hats. They marched down, they stood to attention, and they did it peacefully but firmly. And the establishment messed its pants. And I've got to say, that section of the film to me was a real high point. And as somebody who is obviously, you know, quite obviously a white ethno-nationalist, I watched that and I was in awe, and I was thinking, gosh, I wish we as white ethno-nationalists in the UK were that ordered. I wish we were that together. I wish we were that sort of disciplined, that every time we did something, we looked that good. And I thought it was a great displaying Canuck the other day, but I've always found that when we do something, I say we, I'm not just talking about PA, I'm talking about the wider nationalist movement. When the wider nationalist movement holds a demonstration or holds a protest, there's always a few people there who've had a few to drink. There's always a few people there who want to have a clash with the other side. There's always a picture that a journalist will get of a guy screeching at the Antifa, or a guy with a bag in his hand full of tinnies. He's having a quick, you know, cheeky swig from one of them. And I did really admire the way that Nation of Islam was utterly, utterly disciplined with everything that they did. And they were disciplined in a way which wouldn't actually get them arrested for anything in the UK law. So they weren't using political uniform or anything like that. I just thought it was really good. That to me was sort of the high point of what we should learn from that. And I've often been criticized online for saying that nationalism should be about bringing out the best in our people. Nationalism should be about taking our people to the next level. So we're not doing this. We're not doing this so that our people can sort of rot in solitude. We don't want closed borders and the deportation of illegal migrants so that white people can drink tinnies in peace and just sink into the swamp of, you know, modernity unaccosted by other races. We're doing this so that we can take our destiny into our own hands, recapture our nations, and then become something better. And I really like that message that the Nation of Islam pushed. And I specifically like the way Malcolm X was so moralistic throughout the film. And that really chimed with me, because I believe that we must be the same. We must set an example. What did you guys think of that? And did that reach out to you? We'll start with you, St. Harrison.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you compared how they approached the police station to how that group approaches police stations now, when one of them has done something, well, actually has done something wrong, it's ends in like criminal damage, fires, and 3 days of protesting. But as you say, you see in Cannock, everyone who's there for PA was at one end, perfectly normal, not shit-faced. And then at the other side of Cannock, you had the Tommy crowd. Yeah, everyone would... If everyone just followed PA's example, or as you say, the Nation of Islam, the press, the police, the general onlookers would have nothing bad to say. I mean, if everyone from PA or who followed PA's code of conduct when it comes to things like this all lived in the same area, we could behave exactly the same. So as nationalism grows and the more ordered one, like you saw, or we saw in the film, took place, then that could only be a good thing.
Now, Laura, I know that when you turn up at a demo, you love to walk through the streets with a vest bag in your hand with a few cheap cans of Skull just to light up the day. But what do you think to my heretical notion that you should leave the Skull at home? And obviously, this is a joke. Laura doesn't do
that. I am that guy.
She did drop a bottle of gin on her foot once.
I did broke my toe with a bottle of Bombay Sapphire.
Bloody.
I opened the cupboard and it fell out.
Laura, before you go on, the important part of this story was the bottle of Bombay Sapphire. Okay,
yeah, it was, but my toe wasn't.
at least the right thing suffered.
Yeah, well, I think that PA do look that good. We've just got the photos through from yesterday. They came through about 10 minutes before we went live, and our lads and lasses look absolutely impeccable. They stood there so proud, all dressed really nicely with the flags, looking confident and defiant. And the photos just look amazing. And this is not, I don't mean to criticize any other member of the public, but there's a reason why when the press post pictures of these demonstrations, they don't actually post any pictures of Patriotic Alternative, they'll take the one guy who turned up drunk and stick a picture of him in the article and say that he was Pierre, even though he wasn't. And I think that's testament to, you know, how high our standards are. And I think it's important that we keep doing that. And as our ranks grow, I mean, yesterday was the biggest, in my opinion, feel free to correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think it's been the biggest anti-migrant hotel protest so far. They are getting bigger and bigger.
You are not wrong. You are not wrong. And I'm going to say this as well. I'm going to say this because it does need saying. You were already at the bandstand in Cannock when I arrived. And I was organising the PA activists in the car park beforehand. I was liaising with the police officers there on the day, speaking to them about which route they wanted us to actually take into the town centre. And obviously, we are always very happy to go along with what they say. We don't, you know, we're not there because we want a tear up or a confrontation. We're there because we want to speak to the public. And you can actually see this on our social media. I've shared a couple of clips from different angles. We had wonderful banners, placards, and big PA flags. And as we left that car park, I said to everyone, raise your placards, raise your flags, get them in the air. We're on the move. And as we walked down this street into Cannock Centre, and the crowd got a view of us walking in, the cheer that went up, it was just unbelievable. I have never felt so good and so humbled just walking into a town centre before for one of these protests. The reception we got was absolutely brilliant. And I look back at it now, and even though I've watched it a couple of times, it still makes the hairs on my arms stand up. It was just unbelievable to hear it was, wasn't it?
The video was absolutely amazing because I was at the bandstand already because we got there a bit early to help set up. And we just heard everyone clapping in the audience and we looked and about 40 PA guys turned up all marching with Mark at the front, holding these big placards and signs and flags and marched towards the bandstand. And everyone there, like hundreds of people, just cheered. And it proper shocked me because you're always told, you know, everyone hates us, we're the bad guys. But just to be out there in the audience to cheer. I mean, I saw like the cops on Twitter afterwards and the far left are saying that we cut an audio recording of a crowd cheering and put it over the video. That's how they're trying to cope with the fact that the public cheered us that much. But it just looked amazing. And there's another angle as well that I've seen. I think it might have been Steve Laws that posted it. It just an incredible reception. But our guys, they have such high standards. And to people who say that it's anti-working class to have these standards, actually, no, you're the ones who are being anti-working class because you're saying that working class people can't polish themselves up and wear, you know, clean clothes, freshly ironed clothes, and conduct themselves well. You're saying that working class people can't speak well and aren't intelligent. So you're the anti-working class people. I mean, I'm working class myself. You know, I grew up on a council estate, and you've just got to try and be the best person that you can be and understand that the cameras are always on you and you're representing not only nationalism, but your people. And I'm excited to see where we're going to go because I don't know if you've had a chance to look through the pictures, Mark, that came through 10 minutes ago, but they are epic. Some of the best pics. They're going in the calendar next year, put it that way. That's how good they are.
I'm going to have a look now. And I just want to say something about the issue of things being, you know, working class or anti-working class. And I've got to say this. My granddad was a proud man. He was a proud man that worked for the council all his life. He fought for the country. He was in the RAF. And when he used to go to the Working Men's Club for a pint on a Sunday afternoon, well, actually just before Sunday lunch, he wore his trousers, a smart jacket, a shirt, a tie, and always a hat. Those people were not scruffs. They were not down and out. They didn't revel in being rude or being offensive. They didn't swear in front of women. They always knew how to handle themselves and present themselves. They wore a hat when they were outdoors. They took the hat off as they were walking into a room. They were absolute gems. And today, this small noisy group of people who think that working class should be associated with being foul-mouthed, being drunk, being a scruff, being uneducated, behaving in a loutish manner, and generally acting like, you know, a guest on a Jeremy episode of the Jeremy Kyle show. As Laura said, it's those people who are anti-working class, not us. Nativist, what's your thoughts on...
Sorry, quickly, yeah, the pictures have just gone up on Telegram just this minute. If you look at the PA Telegram channel, some of those things that we're just talking about, Mark, that first photo of you at the front with the placard. Yeah, they're amazing.
All right, cheeky look on my face.
Sorry for interrupting, Nativist.
Yeah, Nativist, give your opinion on the thing, then we'll do the super chats. Just give your opinion on this issue, then we'll do the super chats.
To your point, Mark, you know, I grew up with my granddad. He was very working class, big socialist. I think he basically supported the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia. And I remember him in the 90s. He used to wear like a tweed jacket and a flat cap everywhere. Like and smart trousers, always very smartly dressed. And when you watch these films that are, you know, from that time, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and, you know, people were very smart back then, you know, white working class or African-American. It really is a stark contrast to modern day. And I think we need to get back to that. I mean, I'm guilty myself of being a bit of a dresser down, and I do try and make the effort sometimes when I get the opportunity. But yeah, I definitely think we need to get back to smart dress, and I actually prefer the British Union, the fascist aesthetics after the Public Order Act, where they couldn't wear the uniform anymore. I actually prefer it with the sort of jackets, full suits, and it was very smart. It looks a bit more authentic. I did think the fascist uniforms were a bit larpy, if I'm honest. I did prefer the sort of traditional English business suit. In the film, when they're doing the protest, they do look the part. They're very organized, smartly dressed, and I think that's how you do it, and that's, people respect that. If you move as one in an order, there's a clear authority, and it's beautiful, and you're at your peak, people respect that. People will always respect authority. People always respect beauty. People will always respect excellence. Very well done to PA. I'm astounded at the progress you've made lately. And long may it continue. Long may we continue to, you know, win hearts and minds of the British people and let them know what's going on and give them a outlet to organise politically to a good end.
Okay, thank you. Let's do some super chats with the Odyssey ones first. Celtic Perspective gave an Odyssey token. Thank you so much. Said, much better than Blackula. Very interesting film review, especially this is about an ethno-nationalist. Praise Yacoub. Thank you. Hammer gave one Odyssey token. Thank you so much. Said, Black Americans were objectively better off under segregation. So were Black South Africans under apartheid. That's very true. One thing I'll say about this film, I've got to say this. But when you saw the way blacks lived in Harlem under segregation with the nice suits, the flamboyant hats, they went to these dances, that was actually objectively better than the crime-ridden, you know, gangster rap-infested cesspit it is now. And it's kind of funny because some people will say, well, did they really all dress in suits and act like that? I have actually talked to David Duke about this. You've got to remember, he's a good 30 years older than me now. So, and he's been doing this since he was 20. So he was involved in, you know, politics, racial politics, before I was even born. And he'll attest that when he was growing up in America, which was obviously in, you know, the 1950s, blacks did dress like that. They did wear suit shirts and ties. They were very smart. They went to their own churches. And there was a sort of there was lines that you didn't cross, but there was respect and there was politeness. And he said that blacks today are objectively far, far worse. And there's far more black criminality. There's far more black on black violence. And blacks are actually worse off for integration, just as whites are. So that is a very important point. The guy whose name I can't pronounce, really sorry. You only gave one Odyssey token, so I suppose it's not the end of the world if I mispronounce it. I always get your name wrong, and it's that Greek scholar. Somebody's going to tell me and laugh at me for getting it wrong. Sorry about that. He says, I forget the comedian who said this. I'm Malcolm XXL. I'm leader of the fat people. Well, thank you for that. thank you.
Diogenes.
Diogenes, that's it. Wasn't it?
Well,
wasn't it Patrice O'Neill who made that joke?
I don't know.
I think it was.
And there's a guy from Australia who describes himself as a stupid moron. And he said, would you ever do a Broken Britain film? Some good films are Harry Brown, Dead Man's Shoes, Eden Lake, Summer Scars, etc. What do you think about doing a Broken Britain film, a film about sort of British working class or British, you know, underclass? Would you like to do one of those next month? What does the chat think? I've got a plan for next month.
We did This Is England before.
Yeah, that was just an English film, though.
Do you mean like Cares?
Well, it was pretty broken.
Like Cares?
We're not doing Cares. I'm not doing Cares. He's talking about, like, stuff that chronicles the sort of underclass in Britain. And
like Trainspotting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be up for that.
Yeah, right.
All right, Broken Britain. Okay, well, I'll leave his suggestions there. You've won this, my friend. You've won this. I'm leaving them up. Because I didn't actually prepare for one. This guy also said Marcus Garvey preceded Malcolm X and was strongly opposed to integration and miscegenation. He went to a NAACP meeting once and left because all the lawyers were Jewish. yeah, that's something I've heard before. And one thing I didn't bring up during the stream, but George Lincoln Rockwell, leader of the American Nazi Party, who was also assassinated, was very much kind of like a bit like a white Malcolm X. And he also sadly assassinated, but they actually worked together. One thing that wasn't included in the book was, wasn't included in the film, was when Malcolm X was giving a speech and at the front of the auditorium was George Lincoln Rockwell and several of his supporters all in Nazi uniform. And Rockwell was invited up on stage to address the black crowd saying that they wanted separation too. So that's, that is very interesting. This guy also asked, has anyone read the NOI book, Nation of Islam book, on the Jewish role in slavery? Apparently it's quite scholarly and is sourced from mainstream Jewish sources. Could be a good book for book club. Yeah, if you can send me a PM about that, send me a private message about that, and we'll make that happen. That would be a very, very good book to review. So please, let's try and go ahead with that. And finally, he asks, Malcolm X was very wary of Jewish people. He openly called out the ADL and blamed Jews for slavery. That's also a very important point that we've covered in tonight's show. We've got a couple of other questions. The Nationalist Struggle 14 said, can we have a crime film next month? I'll suggest Drive. Well, we're doing one about Broken Britain, but we will do... happy to do a crime film. I think we've already done a gangster film, but we could definitely do a crime or heist film one month. Somebody called Morphine Abuse Is Wrong said, I'll suggest Inception as a crime film. We're not doing a crime film, but thank you. And I agree. Don't abuse morphine. It's wrong. Kia 5000 said MLK or X. Well, let's go around the group. Martin Luther King was definitely a major, major hypocrite. This was a guy who was regularly using white prostitutes, drugs, etc. He was a man who was playing out of the integration textbook, the textbook on integration. And what Martin Luther King's legacy is an America with more racial problems now than it had when Martin Luther King was leading the civil rights movement. Whereas if you'd had Malcolm X get his way, because the blacks could have gone one way or another, really. You know, the civil rights movement could have gone for peaceful separation with Malcolm X at the head, or it could have gone for integration with Martin Luther King at the head. And it went for integration. But integration has led to a disaster. So I'm definitely, my vote goes for Malcolm X over Martin Luther King. What do you think, St. Harrison? Martin X or Malcolm, Martin Luther King or Malcolm X?
Malcolm X, because Martin Luther King gets far too much credit from black and white people now, because he essentially just a liberal. And like you say, didn't he watch some woman get raped and didn't say nothing about it? And it's all been released since, but people kind of gloss over that because he was like, everyone can unite. So no, Malcolm X, because he was a racist.
Well, thank you. Laura, what do you think? Malcolm X or Martin Luther King?
What, are you just choosing the one that you like the most?
Well, obviously.
Well, obviously Malcolm X.
And she's not even qualifying that. She's disgusted. She's even being asked. She's like, I'm not even answering this properly. Screw yourself, Mark. The show's over. Right, Nativist, are you going to be as to the point or...?
Yeah, huge fan of Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X. And, you know, the two black nationalists that anyone's ever heard of are Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela, because they were both Jewish ops. You know, they were working very closely with Jews for an integrationist agenda. And, you know, Martin Luther King has his own bank holiday in America now. And when Mandela got to power, all the mines, the mineral wealth of South Africa was retained in Jewish hands, and the Dutch Boer people, the true South Africans, they were completely displaced politically. So, yet again, it's the Juvenalian analysis of the higher using the lower to attack the middle. And normally that, you know, that means Jewish merchants working with black welfare class to attack the self-sufficient white working class.
Okay, well, I think we've done all the chat, so let's do a roundup. Everyone give their opinions and a score out of 10. Obviously, I'm going to say no half scores. People are going to give half scores. No one has any respect for the rules these days. Bloody hell. Come on, St. Harrison, what did you think to the film? And was it better than Blackula?
Blackula was absolutely awful. And it was also about how Dracula wanted to go to, Blackula went to see Dracula just to try and get reparations for slavery and ended up dying. But anyway, Malcolm X is too long and drawn out at the start and could be reduced a bit. It's too much time wasted on overlong flashbacks and dancing. The second half of the film, though, it gets much better after he leaves prison. He's such an interesting character, but the film misses out the important details, which we've covered. And it turns out the reason the Jewish aspect was removed is because Spike Lee got in trouble 3 years before when he made Mo Better Blues and all the Jews kicked off. So that's probably why he left it out. So definitely watch a documentary about Malcolm X, unless you've got 3 hours to spare. I wouldn't dissuade anyone from watching the film either. So I'll give it a 5 out of 10.
Okay, 5 out of 10. That's shockingly low. I was not expecting that. Okay, Laura, a score out of 10, please. I am shocked. A score out of 10 and your final thoughts.
I just don't respect any of St. Harrison's opinions on films.
Neither do I.
I thought it was a really good movie. And to say it was 3.5 hours long, I didn't get bored of it. I wasn't clock watching. I was enjoying it. It was interesting to learn about things to do with Malcolm X's life. I thought Ardenz was brilliant. I thought all the other actors were really good as well. I don't think it's one of those, you know, like Godfather tier films where it's going to go down in history as like the best film ever, and it's just so beautiful it makes your hair stand on end. But it was a really enjoyable film and I would recommend it, so I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay, Nativist, your final thoughts and a score, please, my friend.
Yeah, I was excited to watch this after listening to Malcolm X's autobiography. It didn't disappoint. It was a long film, but kept me entertained. Brilliant performance by Denzel Washington. Wouldn't say the cinematography and production was like super good apart from that, but it was solid all the same. And it tells the story of an important person from history of the last century. Little bit disappointed with the sort of covering up of the Jewish angle. That's to be expected with Hollywood. So all in all, 7 out of 10.
Okay, I'm going to give my score now, and my score is going to be actually the highest. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10. I'll give you the score before I tell you what I thought of the film. But obviously from the score, you can tell I really, really enjoyed it. And I did really, really enjoy this film. Now, when I actually saw how long this film was going to be, I was like, oh no. I was like, what has Laura put us in for? And I was actually really disappointed we didn't get to review my film this month, because my film is what I was going for, Boys in the Hood, which is a film that I really, really enjoyed. And I think it's got a really important message, actually. It's a film about basically the cycle of black violence in black neighborhoods. And it is a film that I genuinely enjoy. I've seen it a couple of times, actually. So when it wasn't my film this week, I was a bit like, oh, okay, well, here we go then. It's not my choice, but let's see what we get. And I was really surprised. I really enjoyed the film. I really enjoyed the acting. I thought Denzel Washington was incredible in the film. I thought every performance was brilliant. There wasn't a single one that was phoned in. Even minor performances like the police chief were just authentic. Everything was brilliant. It wasn't the best production values, and he did seem to base a lot of the scenes and a lot of the cinematography on Goodfellas. That I make clear. It's not the perfect film. It does have some anti-whiteness in it. I might actually give it 7. It's a 7 or an 8. If I was going to break my own rules, I'd probably give it 7.5, come to think of it. There is some anti-whiteness in it. There are some liberties taken with Malcolm X's actual opinions. But overall, it's very thought-provoking, very well acted. And it's a film worth watching from any nationalist perspective, white nationalist, black nationalist, doesn't matter. If you're a nationalist, it is worth watching. And I think that's the important thing. As racially conscious people, I don't think we should ever just look through the eyes of racially conscious whites. I think we should look through the eyes of other racially conscious groups and consider working with them. And, you know, if there was a Malcolm X in Britain today, I would work with him. If there was a Malcolm X, you know, campaigning for black separatism in Britain today, I would absolutely be, you know, making a beeline to do an interview, getting on PWR. And it seems, though, unfortunately, that we're in a position today where genuine black nationalism, just like genuine white nationalism, has been completely subverted. So, you know, whereas at the thorn in our side is the Civ Nat sort of grifting types, the thorn in the side of genuine black nationalists who call for separatism are these integrationist race baiters that just call for reparations and more handouts and more integration and the white man bending over backwards, but not any actual solution. So, yeah, so many parallels for us to learn from. And a genuinely enjoyable film that is elevated above its worth by absolutely stellar performances from Denzel Washington and the rest of the cast. So, yeah, really enjoyed it. Wasn't expecting to, but, you know, yeah, enjoyed it. So, Guys, people want a broken Britain month next month. We've got Harry Brown, Dead Man's Shoes, Eden Lake and Summer Scars. Are there any other films that sum up broken Britain? I'm going to go with Trainspotting because I think Trainspotting is a phenomenal film. And as a, I watched that when I was a young man and I did think it really, really portrayed this idea of people falling into complete and utter despair as they're ignored by the government and the system. St. Harrison, do you have a suggestion for this?
A film called Fish Tank from 2009 with Michael Fassbender. It's about a council estate mum who's an absolute mess and she's got two daughters she doesn't care about. Then she gets this new fella who shows them a bit of interest and kind of gets worse from there. It's a good film.
Okay, we've got a suggestion in the chat from Helensian, who's a really nice guy. I've met him, and he said ID, and ID is a really good film. It's actually about a guy who infiltrates a football firm. So, yep, and he deals with people who are addicted to, you know, the rush of football, hooliganism and violence. So, yes, that is a great film. Laura, do you have a suggestion, or are you happy with the ones picked so far?
Can we do Rita Sue and Bob too?
Definitely.
Please, it'll be so funny. And it talks a lot about like Pakistani culture as well, so it'll be good to review.
Do Tyrannosaur as well.
Why has Matt gone quiet?
I'm unmuted, but I'm silent.
Let's do Rita Sue and Bob too.
That's hilarious, that film.
It's so good.
For once, we agree.
I hate you, Laura.
I'm out with my decision now, St. Harrison's on my side.
Nativist, do you have... If Rita Sue and Bob 2 wins, I'm going to literally... I'm handing...
I'm going to create multiple we'll telegram accounts and vote for it again and again.
Go on, Nativist, do you have an idea?
Football Factory, is that okay?
I haven't seen that, and I'd really like to, so...
It's good fun.
Okay, Football Factory. Oh no, Football Factory. I've seen Football Factory. It's actually CAC. I've got the original cut that never made the cinema, which is amazing. But the actual version that made the cinema was terrible. They cut all the good music out of it. Yeah, it wasn't good. Ooh, we've got a $99 super chat. Thank you so much. It's from Scaredy Cat. It says, hi panel. I'm chiming in for the American dollar. I apologize. What's she say? Well, let me just bring this up. It's just scrolled away. Wait, she says, hi, panel. I'm chiming in for the American dollar. I apologize. This American movie takes truth preached by Malcolm X of how Jews oppress black community. Dishonestly puts the blame on the white community's shoulder. Thank you for your fairness. Malcolm X became a Sunni Muslim because he realized whites aren't devils. And Scaredy Cat is actually, I believe, from America and is actually a Muslim. So thank you so much for that very, very generous super chat. And yeah, I'll just read that again. Hi, panel. I'm chiming in for the American dollar. I apologize. This American movie takes the truth preached by Malcolm X of how Jews oppress the black community and dishonestly puts the blame on the white community's shoulder. Thanks for your fairness. Malcolm X became a Sunni Muslim because he realized whites aren't the devils. Well, thank you so much for that, Scaredy Cat. Very, very generous of you. I'm pleased you enjoyed the review. So, yeah. Oh, and somebody said Scum with Ray Winston. Yeah, it couldn't be a broken Britain week without Scum. That'll win it and that'll stop Laura in her bloody tracks. Right, no, we've come to... Shut up, Laura. You win. You know what? Laura's simp army just wins her every bloody vote we have.
I haven't won.
Where's my simp army?
You don't have a simp army.
I know. Damn well don't. Okay, everyone say your good night. We're about done. Let's wrap this up. We're 5 minutes early, but I think we've said everything we have to say. And I think this has been one of the best film clubs to date. I've really enjoyed it. Say your goodbyes and tell everyone where we can find you next week, starting with you, St. Harrison.
Good evening. Well, good night, everyone. It's been a good show. And yeah, despite the 5 out of 10, it is a good film. Well, if you're not tired just yet, you can find out the winner of the short story competition at 10 past 9 on my YouTube channel. We'll see who's won out the 26 stories. well done to everyone who went to Cannock yesterday. It looked absolutely brilliant. And yeah, everyone have a lovely month, and we'll watch Rita Sue and Bob 2 next month. Bye bye.
Oh, okay. You better give yourself an outro before I just kick you off the stream.
Next shot about for Rita Sue and Bob 2.
Shut up.
We can annoy Mark next month.
I'm censoring this out. Do you know what? I might actually go back and stay up all night and just censor this out.
I'll just put a little video on my channel telling everyone to vote for Rita Sue and Bob, because it's going to be funny that Mark's going to be annoyed. But yeah, I'm back tomorrow night with Sam for Tea Time with Sam and Laura at 7 o'clock. And we'll be talking a little bit about Cannock plus a lifestyle topic. But yeah, I hope you all enjoy the rest of your weekend. Take care. If you're not involved with Patriotic Alternative yet, what's your excuse? Get signed up on the website. Come along to one of these protests. Hope to see you all there. Yeah, take care, everyone. Good night.
And that's something we can definitely agree with. Nativist, give yourself an outro, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Good discussion. Yeah, everyone go and read up on Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X and maybe even Louis Farrakhan as well. I think they definitely, you know, overall push the right message of separation, not integration. And I think we need to bring back black repatriation to Africa as a noble aim for all parties. And, well done to PA. Brilliant work, as always. And another great demonstration at the weekend. And, it's great to see all that and get involved if you're not involved already. And thanks again. Have a great week ahead. Ciao.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. I'm just teeing up the poll for next month's film club. Very much looking forward to it already, even though I'm going to hate the film because Laura will win. Please don't vote for Rita Sue and Bob 2. Just please don't. Give me a break, guys. Just once. Trust me. You know, you were the ones that foisted Blazing Saddles upon us. Please pick Scum or ID. They're such good films. Anyway, moving on rapidly. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'll be back next week on Wednesday, and I'll have Morgoth with me. We're going to do a special episode of PWR, episode 201, and it's going to be all about the 15-minute cities, all about the loss of petrol cars, all about these climate lockdowns they're bringing in and how our freedoms and fundamental rights are slowly being taken away and how this ties in with the anti-white pro-migration agenda that we're seeing. So that'll be 7 p.m. Wednesday night. Really looking forward to it. Always love working with Morgoth. Don't know what we'll be doing next Sunday yet, but there's plenty of shows in between, and stay tuned. Keep watching my Telegram, keep watching my Gab for more announcements. Thank you to everyone who turned up in Cannock. If you haven't seen the footage from Cannock, please hop on over to our Telegram and have a look at it. Absolutely inspirational. Thanks to everyone who was there. It's been a wonderful weekend, a wonderful film club. Thank you to St. Harrison, Laura, and Nativist. Thank you to everyone who tuned in. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. What a wonderful show it's been. What a wonderful weekend. Can't wait to see you next week. Stay strong, keep fighting, and if you haven't watched the film, go away and watch it. It's very enjoyable. Good evening, everyone. See you again soon.